David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity in vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit have a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to this place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to its circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear full of hearing. The thing that hath been is that it which shall it be. And that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come in those that shall come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. I communed with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and I have gotten more wisdom than they all that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. I said in mine heart, go to know. I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven of all the days of their life. I had made me great works, I builded my houses, I planted my vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards and planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water, to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house also. I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I gat me men singers and women singers and the delights of the son of men and musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on at all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. And there was no profit under the sun. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath already been done? Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness, and I myself perceived also that one event happened to them all. Then I said in my heart, as I happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I more wise? Then I said in my heart, that is also vanity. For there was no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me. All is vanity and vexation of spirit. In the morning I sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand, for thou knowest not whether shall prosper either this or that, and whether they shall both be alike good. Truly the light is sweet, and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man live many years, and rejoice in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. All that cometh is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that all these things God will bring unto thee in judgment. Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart, and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, for the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun, or the light, or the moon, or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain, in the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because there are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened. And the doors shall be shut in the streets, when the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Also, when they shall be afraid of that which is high, the fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail. Because men goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. Or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Then shall the dust returneth to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it.
Good morning. You may be relieved that it says reading and that I'm not going to attempt to sing this. Those of you who've known me over the years know that that would have cleared out the entire sanctuary. I didn't intentionally choose the most depressing readings in the entire canon of poetry and spirituality, but I hope to take you on a spiritual journey to hear what we have read and heard together with different ears by the time that my message is done. Leonard Cohen wrote, "The birds, they sang at the break of day, start again. I heard them say, don't dwell on what has passed away or what is yet to be. Yeah, the wars, they will come, be fought again. The holy dove, she will be caught again, bought and sold and bought again. The dove is never free. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. That's how the light gets in. We asked for signs. The signs were sent. The birth betrayed, the marriage spent. Yeah, the widowhood of every government. Signs for all to see. I can't run no more with that lawless crowd while the killers in high places say their prayers out loud. But they've summoned up a thundercloud and they're going to hear from me. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. You can add up the parts, you won't have the sum. You can strike up the march, there is no drum. Every heart will come, but like a refugee. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. That's how the light gets in. That's how the light gets in. Well, happy Bastille Day. The 14 juillet celebrates the storming of the Bastille to free people who the people believed were unjustly imprisoned. And as we celebrate or commemorate, as the case may be, this day, I am aware of the ICE sweeps that are going on across this country that are threatened to go on, whether their purpose is to sweep people away or just to frighten them, I don't know because I cannot enter the mind of our leadership. It's too dark a place for me to journey. But while there are sweeps going on, what an incredible metaphor. To sweep up human beings. To sweep up human beings as if they were, in fact, the wretched refuse from some teeming shores and not human beings. This is not a political statement about immigration. That's another topic. Or asylum. That's another topic. Our entire country sometimes seems like an asylum. But we have a very strange situation. We live in a society that has free-range chickens and caged children. There's something wrong with that picture when we deal with what is going on in our world. And sometimes I have to admit that I get depressed, that I want to withdraw, and other times I want to go and storm the castle and storm the Bastille, that my mood, as in most of us, fluctuates. It goes back and forth from engagement to flight. I know the problems are there. I just didn't really know how irremediable they sometimes seem to be. My first passion, kind of as a hobby, I dare not say intellectually, as a six-year-old, was Greek mythology. And the myth of Sisyphus spoke to me even back then, and now it speaks, it yells, it shouts to me. Sisyphus, as you will remember, was condemned to roll a rock up a hill. And when he got to the top of the hill, that rock just rolled down, and again and again and again for eternity. This, for me, in my younger years, was the model of absurdity. What could just be more ridiculous than doing the same thing day after day after day, putting in your work and your sweat and your toil without it breaking your heart and having no escape, being condemned to just do the same thing again and again and again? And then as I grew and changed and wondered and speculated, I thought, is it possible that Sisyphus could ever be happy? Could Sisyphus ever have a smile on his face or in his heart? And I began to believe that Sisyphus could, that it is not the repetition that is the absurdity. There are lots of things that we do on a repetitive basis that we don't consider to be futile. I won't embarrass any of you by asking you the question, but you can answer it with your eyes, and I'm looking. How many of you had showers this morning? How many think that you might have to have a shower again? Oh, maybe tomorrow, or depending on how long you walk across the parking lot, even this afternoon. How many of us wash our hands, not obsessively, but just because they get dirty again? And does that feel absurd? Does that repetition feel absurd? How many of us paint and repair our homes and not only don't think that the repetition is a vanity and a chasing after wind, but look forward with hope to living long enough to have to paint and repair again? It is not the repetition that is the absurdity. It is the mindlessness of not being engaged in the world and being part of the process of what it means to be fully engaged. Yes, I can get into the despair. I can get into the despair because I thought that we rolled a couple of rocks up to the top and they were gonna stay there. I never imagined that we would be litigating Darwin. Really? I guess the greatest argument against Darwin, the people who don't believe in Darwin because they've proven that they can't evolve. I never thought that we would have to litigate civil rights again. I never thought that we would take a turn for nativism again. I never anticipated the Islamophobia and the anti-Semitism and the fissures in our own society. I didn't see this stuff coming really at all. And the changes in our world, in my view, not for the better, have been astonishing. And so those rocks that we rolled up, some of us during the 60s and some of us of a certain age when we were in our 60s, we thought that we had rolled them to the top and that they were going to stay there. And we were wrong. It doesn't stay there. And that's the bad news and it's also the good news. We get a lot of change, a lot of change that is for the better, but it does not protect itself. We have done things that are astonishing. I did think that we would be on an endless track in terms of civil rights, and we're on a looping roller coaster. On the other hand, we made more progress than I anticipated in LGBTQA plus issues, but they will not be self-sustaining without our engagement. I never imagined that there would be sweeps of human beings based on the color of their skin and their place of national origin. I didn't see it coming. And what that means is I can't sit down and relax. In some ways, what a tragedy it would be for Sisyphus if you rolled that rock up to the top of the hill and it just stayed there. And there's no reason to get up in the morning. But there is a reason to get up in the morning, because that rock does roll back down, and that rock back down at the bottom of the hill in a different place from where it started calls on us to re-engage in our old battles and push it up again and have something to do with our lives and our energy. I think that Sisyphus could have a smile knowing that the world needed him to be engaged in what was going on. The issue becomes for me, is there some kind of learning at each time we engage these issues? And again, sometimes I just want to crawl into a corner and weep. I won't stay there, I promise. You will remember, because you've all seen the pictures of 200 people waiting, some patiently, some impatiently, all with anoxia in the death zone on Everest. That's the metaphor for absurdity. They're in the death zone, and they think it's Disneyland, and they're waiting to get to the top. In the meantime, it is not the sea that is giving up its dead. It is the melting ice and snow on Everest in the death zone, and old frozen bodies of people who died there are popping up out of the ice. And they are walking and stumbling past other climbers with anoxia who are freezing and who are dying, and they are stepping over them in a mindless, focused pursuit of triumph or death, and often both. They get to the top and don't get back down alive. They don't know that there's 1/3 of the oxygen available in the death zone. That's why it's the death zone. They don't know that they are dehydrated despite all of this ice. They don't know that they are in a world where there are not enough calories that they can take in to sustain their energy. They don't notice that all of the detritus of human beings who have left oxygen canisters and bags of waste and all kinds of garbage all over this holy mountain, it is a metaphor for ecological blindness, a kind of willful blindness where they're in the death zone, and at least it's labeled the death zone above 26,000 feet. But they're building a death zone, not they, all of us, all our society, all societies, are building death zones at sea level. When will we learn? When will we ever learn? Air is as precious here and may become as scarce as at 26,000 feet. Water and the absence of good water and clean water is the largest single cause of death in the world. Our garbage, as we used to say in Berkeley in the 60s, will bury us. and our bearing it is not protecting us. Why can't we learn and change and recognize what's going on around us? It does seem sometimes to be the very model of absurdity. But the response to that kind of absurdity cannot be permanent despair and depression. So I offered that Ecclesiastes Koheleth reading, and let me spin it for you, because it, in the words of the President of the United States, you didn't hear what you heard. The Hebrew for vanity of vanities is very different from our word vanity. When we think of vanity, we think of something either meaningless or valueless, or sometimes we just go, I feel pretty, I feel pretty. That's not what Koheleth is talking about. The words in Hebrew are havel havalim, havel havalim, amar Koheleth, hakol havel. It is breath, breath of breaths, breath of breaths. Everything, everything, hakol, is but a breath. That's a very different understanding from vanity. It means that what is breath? It is usually invisible, insubstantial, with any luck at all, odorless. Yet it is the animating thing of our lives. Every breath we are taking in spirit, that is, we inspire. When we die, we expire. It is about breath, which is central to the spiritual disciplines of nearly every religion. It's about awareness of that breath. It's about being centered on the life force. It's not about this is valueless. His explorations are a spiritual journey. It's a spiritual journey, not up Mount Everest. He shows the folly of being that goal driven and believing, when I climb Everest, then everything's going to be great in my life. I'm going to be happy. My heart, like Sisyphus's stone, is going to stay at the top. He says, I tried wisdom, and not even wisdom filled me. I tried pleasure. I built pleasure gardens. I built walled orchards. In the Hebrew, that's the first use of the word paradise. Pardesa from the Farsi Persian. Is a walled pleasure garden. I tried pleasure with women, presumably with men and boys. I tried wealth, I tried power, and at the end of the day, knowing that I was going to die just like the poor people under me, it all came to nothing. It is not that life came to nothing. It is that striving after these things, that was not the answer. So at the end, and I didn't have it in the reading says, eat, drink, and be merry. Eat your bread with someone whom you love. Do your work not because it's going to succeed forever, but like the mandalas that were made in sand 20 years ago, 25 years ago in Fullerton, and they're made for the sand to blow away. The meaning is in the work, not in its permanence. The mandala blows away in the wind. Our lives at some point blow away and we are dust in the wind. But every breath that we take here, we can imbue with some sense of meaning. Not the pleasures alone, not the power alone, but the journey that we take together in engaging the world with each other. Our lives, the meaning in our lives, are not in the achieving but in the striving. In the striving not alone, but together with other people. With the mindfulness of knowing that every breath is life. That every breath is, in a sense, shared because we are breathing the same air. There's only one atmosphere in the whole world. We are drinking the same water. Every source of water and ice and rain, all of them are connected. Our lives and our times are connected. For me, when I want to feel depressed because the world is not going the way I thought it would, it's a wake-up call. Sit down, take a rest, take a breath, and then get back up again and be grateful for the breath, be grateful for the spirit, be grateful that the rock doesn't stay at the top, but still the top calls for us to be involved. At whatever age we are, whatever our gifts, whatever our talents, we have the opportunity to work, to change, to heal, to love each other and our beautiful but sometimes broken world. Yes, there is a crack in everything, and that is where the light gets in. And we together are that light. And may our individual little lights shine so that when we are joined together and our lights are joined together and our spirits are joined together, we have warmed and illuminated some small, cold, dark corner of the universe. That is our challenge. And it's not depressing for me, it is inspiring. Thank you.
That was lovely. Our offertory is a vital way we show our gratitude to this community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world. We thank you for your generosity.
Closing hymn, we will be singing hymn number 1028, The Fire of Commitment. Please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.